The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
As the snow continues to fall in central Indiana, welcome to the bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. It's cold here.
Yeah, and the snowflakes have been falling lightly ever since, what was it, Friday? Saturday, we got the 3-4 inches of snow here.
Mm-hmm. Kind of snow's all over my farm on Farmville.
clearly, that's one of the few places where it's stuck. it was kind of a good snow, actually, the kind that makes it look pretty without really sticking to the roads, which is a good thing.
You know, one of the things I love about the house we live in, it has a really interesting roof line, mm-hmm. or a series of roof lines. And you look out the bathroom window and you see the roof line of the back part of the addition to the house. And it almost looks like you're looking at a Swiss chalet. I mean, it's kind of cool. So I do enjoy seeing snow on the roof then.
Yeah, yeah. But
you know, as a rule, no.
The older we get. Yeah, damn it.
I loved snow as a kid. The neighbor kids are out building snowmen and having a great time.
Yeah.
Well, you know what today is?
Today is December 7th. It is the anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
It is indeed. And I posted to PID News this morning a link to a video. And, in fact, I embedded the video because it was something that the Indianapolis Star allowed us to do. They kindly put the embed code in there. Mm-hmm. And I did so to make sure that everybody saw this gentleman's story. And there is a link to the original story, the original article at the Indianapolis Star. And I very much suggest that you go to that original article at theindystar.com and read everything, because essentially the point is being made that we are losing these veterans.
Right.
Many of them are in their late 80s.
Yeah, these would be the youngest guys. I mean, this took place in 1941. You'd assume that the youngest servicemen in Pearl Harbor on that day would probably be about the age of 18, which would mean born around 1923. So most of those fellows are 87 or older. And there just aren't – well, they're fading away. And the headline of the story at the Indianapolis Star was Pearl Harbor, a dying memory.
Yeah, I would say many of them actually were born before 1920.
So, absolutely, sure.
Most of them, I think, are probably 90.
Mm-hmm. A great many of them are no longer with us. And so we're going to feature a little bit of audio, memories of that terrible day from an Indianapolis resident who was on the ground at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941.
That morning, December the 7th, I was getting ready to go to Sunday school. It was quite a Sunday morning.
1941, a date which will live in infamy.
We heard the planes coming in, but no one thought anything about it until we looked up when they dropped the first bombs. We looked up and saw the big red sun. Then we knew what it was. I tried to help some men out of the water that day. And you know that the oil was burning on the water, because water and oil doesn't mix. I mean, we know that. And as it caught on fire from the bombs that was dropped and the torpedo, I reached to get one seaman. And as I went to pull him up, the skin began to come off his body. He was burnt that bad. So it was a terrible thing. Some of the guys that couldn't be aboard ship set up machine guns there. And as one of the planes come over, he fired, and you could see the Jap pilot rise up because that bullet had hit him, and that plane crashed over in Hickam Field. We know that to be for sure. And it was talked about but by him being black, he never was decorated for it. So that shows you another thing that we went through.
United States of America.
That's William Harvey, an Indianapolis resident and a crewman on the USS Sacramento, I believe, in 1941, recounting his memory of that day. Just one of the many who were there on the ground, and not so many of them left anymore.
Oh, my gosh. Brave men.
Well, truly.
You know, young men, kids. Many of them were probably kids. I mean, Nicole's
sure.
age.
Yeah. And you think about that horrific experience of pulling a man, trying to get him out of the water, and the man's skin sloughing off his body because of the horrific injuries that he'd suffered in the water. And there were, you know, relatives that we have. I mean, your father underwent some pretty traumatic things in World War II. My
uncle. His ship sank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My uncle, who was a CB in the South Pacific. One of my dad's cousins, who was among the group of American soldiers that were overrun by the Germans during the Battle of the Bulge. Had his foot run over by a tank, in fact, thankfully in very soft mud. Still hurt, but at least he didn't lose his foot or anything like that. But he wound up holing up inside a farmhouse while the Germans set up a command post upstairs.
Gosh.
So cousin Doyne was in the basement of the farmhouse for 3 days until the Americans recovered the position.
But again, you got very hungry.
I can imagine. Your rations don't last too long, especially when you're running for your life. You don't think about taking rations along with you. It's more like dodging bullets.
My goodness.
Yes. And at our age now, I think we can appreciate a little better what it must have been like at that age to suddenly be thrust into a position that no one should ever endure.
No, that is so true. Well, thank you to everyone who served in World War II and the Korean conflict and Vietnam, any of the wars since then, the conflicts, the undeclared wars.
Yeah, and you know, it's been this way throughout human history, at least since the time of, say, Nimrod, who was a mighty man in the earth and became the first world conqueror, the first one to try to set up his own kingdom at the expense of others. Humanity has proven over and over again that the only thing we get better at over time, contrary to the belief of the New Age movement, is killing and subjugating one another.
What movie was it that we were watching that was asking the difference between death and war? It was that awful movie, The Horseman, with Dennis Quaid. It was such a bad movie, and it had so much potential.
Yeah.
But there was one line where, first of all, Quaid asks his pastor, what is the when looking at the four horsemen of the apocalypse and trying to solve the crimes, he asks, what is the difference between war and death? Two of the writers. And later on, one of the people arrested for the crimes asks the same question. And the pastor had replied, well, war is a concept.
Okay.
Death is a person.
Okay.
In the context of the Book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
The person being interviewed in the police station says, death is an ending. Everything else is war.
I guess in a sense that's true if you look at death from the standpoint of the second death, which
is... Well, that's just how the enemy, I think, sees it. Death is the end for the enemy. That's certainly true. There is no redemption for the enemy.
Yeah.
There is the end, and that's it. Everything else is war.
They've cast their lot, and they're just going to try to drag as many of us down with them as they can.
And so trying to convince us that same fate lies, you know, in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It is an ending preceded by nothing more than war. And I would say spiritual war is what they mean.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Because that's the war that matters to the enemy.
Right.
The blood spilling on earth in the material world is just part of that spiritual war.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that we've gotten better and better at with the passing centuries. The 20th century set a record for the number of people that have been killed in the various conflicts. And so this idea, regardless of who's putting it out there, New Age movement or Dominion theologist, that we can somehow build the kingdom of God on earth or the kingdom of Nirvana or Shambhala or whatever you want to call it, is just ludicrous. There's nothing in human history that would give you any evidence to believe that somehow we can turn this into heaven on earth.
No, and the enemy laughs whenever we go to war. I mean, the truth is they do, because that does nothing more than serve their ends.
Right.
And the bloodletting that takes place not only, you know, kills off human beings, but it also, in some cases, actually acts as a spiritual incantation,
mm-hmm.
opening
mm-hmm.
gateways.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of things that we try to pay attention to here. And I think Sharon, in talking about an otherwise really bad movie, kind of a low budget, low rent, poor attempt to copy Seven,
mm-hmm.
the excellent Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt movie. Kevin Spacey was really creepy in that one.
Was he not? He always is.
Yeah, even when he's trying to be funny, which is kind of weird. But there are things in there that you can take out, you know, lines or lessons or concepts that that kind of help to illustrate or illuminate, if you'll pardon the use of the word, the spiritual war that in which we find ourselves. I mean, we are deployed on a battlefield, whether we'd like to admit it or not. And I think a question that you've raised before that is really fascinating to consider. There are a lot of films out there whose only purpose is to display the shedding of virtual blood,
mm-hmm.
So-called torture porn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The combination of blood shedding and sexual acts.
Yeah, and what is the purpose of that from the enemy standpoint? Are they what do they gain through the shedding of virtual blood and the depiction of brutality and violence on screen?
Well, think about this. What are the two things that we know for sure that were required by the gods from their worshipers?
Blood. Mm-hmm.
And sexual magic.
Yeah. And these are things that you see in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, go back and read through some of those passages in the Old Testament where God is telling the Hebrews, don't do this. It's not and I remember very clearly reading through Leviticus or Deuteronomy, wherever.
One of those.
Yeah. When, Nicole and I used to sit and read Bible every morning before school.
And you read some tough passages.
We just
it wasn't like you read the fluffy stuff.
No,
as if there is fluffy stuff.
No, we went through the Bible and just started through it, and we'd get done with a book and then we'd pick another one. And so we kind of hopscotched around some, but we did go through the Old Testament stuff and the history. And God was pretty clear when the Hebrews were about to take Canaan that God said, "Don't do these things that these people are doing that I'm pushing out of the way," and we stopped and talked about it because some of the things are pretty, pretty gross, and some are just disturbing. And I had to explain to Nicole that these aren't things that God was telling the Hebrews not to do in case somebody got the idea that maybe they should try it sometime. These are things He was telling them not to do because these people in the land were already doing them. Ritual prostitutes, having relations with
mm-hmm.
relatives and with the livestock. It was
ridiculous.
Right.
And if you look at, there's a commandment, there's a law
mm-hmm.
from God against bestiality.
Right.
Well, there you only have a law if someone's doing it.
Yeah. And, the irony of the modern gay rights movement is that they believe that this is an enlightened thing that they're trying to do. And in fact, it's a very old thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Roman emperor, in fact, who, wanted to legalize it. And I can't, Elagabalus, I think was his name, in about 200 AD, or I'd have to go back and look now. But, so at least a couple thousand years from a legal framework. But when you look back 3,500 years, there were all sorts of, do whatever you feel like doing attitudes in the ancient Near East. So this is not new. This is not enlightened. and the attitudes that God laid down in the Old Testament against such behavior are not because they were old-fashioned people back then. It's because God said, look, this is just flat wrong.
I don't recall any kind of a excuse me, a law in there against sex by surprise.
No.
Not exactly put that way. Normally, that's considered, well, if you want to really take it to its ultimate end, that would be rape. That would be
sex
against your, you know, when you're saying no when someone insists on it.
Right.
But sex by surprise.
Yeah, we're shifting gears here and coming
totally
to present
shifting
day.
Gears.
Yeah,
Julie, and I have to ask really quickly, I'm going to ask you rather than write you a note, what time are you interviewing Newt Gingrich's?
Oh, Dr. Jim Carlos, 7:30 p.m. Eastern tonight.
What time is it now?
It is 6:40.
We're doing okay then.
Yes, we're fine.
It just occurred to me that you had said you were going to do that tonight, and you jumped through a lot of barrel hoops to get that interview. So that's something I think I just want to say really quickly, that I think that's a coup for you, and I'm really, really glad that he's willing to come on and talk with you, because he knows we aren't really on board with the things that they're trying to do.
I'm not sure exactly how much of what we do he's aware of. I was really surprised in that he initiated the conversation. He found a blog post that I wrote several months ago about Glenn Beck.
Well, that's my point. I think he is sort of aware that we're at least aware of him.
Yes. And many of the things that we've talked about.
And that was at a time when, honestly, it seemed like those of us who are railing against dominionism and sort of not on board with Beck either, we're being contacted. So I think it's going to be an interesting interview. I'm really glad. I just don't want to miss it. So anyway, back to
Julian Assange.
By surprise.
Yeah, WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has turned himself into police in London today, December 7th, 2010.
They're not charging him. This is just an extradition. This is sort of practice.
But they have refused bail. And interestingly, the Fox News report this afternoon said that it was because of the severity of the charges, including rape. Well, excuse me, but it's not rape that he's been charged with.
No.
He's been charged with sex by surprise, which is probably a poor English translation of whatever the legal phrase is in Swedish.
So after the fact, you throw a party for the guy in your own home where the act took place, you're still surprised by it?
Under Swedish law, apparently, Sweden has some very weird laws that they believe are more enlightened as regards sexual assault than any other nation in the Western world. And unprotected sex, even accidentally unprotected sex, as appears to be the case with at least one of Assange's partners, can qualify as...
Well, I think the accusation is that it was not accidental. He somehow planned it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's here's the reason we bring all of this up. It's not so we can, you know, talk about this. It is because this has nothing to do with what he really is being accused of by many countries all over the world.
Right. And that is espionage at
This is just a means to get him behind jail.
Right.
But it's going to backfire on these countries because he is threatening to make the major dump of all time as far as the WikiLeaks documents. Everything else that he's holding, he's going to just put it all out there. And I think that if he's holding anything really, really damaging to Obama in particular, we're going to see it. And the reason we're going to see it is because, as you said, the lawyer that he has hired is in Soros's camp.
Yeah, he's done pro bono work for the Open Society Institute, which is George Soros's organization, as an NGO, which interestingly received funds from the U.S. Department of State during the Bush years to help foster democracy in Ukraine.
We'll call this one Democracy by Surprise.
Yeah, it's a good one. I think apropos.
Mm.
But yeah, it will be interesting to see. And Doug Hagman of the Northeast Intelligence Network has been writing about this, and he's the one who brought that to my attention anyway. I mean, I read that at HomelandSecurityUS.com, which is Doug's website. He also writes for Canada Free Press.
And he's quite a journalist and investigative He's top notch.
He sees the way puzzle pieces fit together better than most of us. So he will be the other guest on Friday night's View from the Bunker, by the way, along with Dr. Jim Garlow, the recorded interview. So
what
should
an
be
exciting
a really,
week.
Yeah, should be a really good show. So anyway, Assange, we'll see how this story continues to play out. But as we said yesterday, it really smells like something other than what it is. It doesn't look like Assange is behind, is working alone, that he's got people who are assisting in this. And we don't just mean private first class Bradley Manning.
No, and what was you found out about Adrian Lamo today?
Well, Lamo, this was the other thing. In fact, I was last night as I was putting together the links to last night's show notes at PIDradio.com, and this article is linked in the show notes for yesterday's program, which is titled Smells Like an Op. Best
it's
I could
a good
do,
title.
Best I could come up with. That
smells like a good title.
Is admittedly working for a semi-secret government contractor that listens in on web traffic from ISPs, internet service providers here in the United States, and then forwards that information about that web traffic, email, browsing history, and so forth to the United States government. So we've got Assange, who apparently has some contacts through his history, and this is a show that Dave Emery did on his podcast, For the Record. He has some intelligence links in his background. He's fed this information by Manning, right, which former intelligence folks
Manning in your
that
quotes.
We know, yeah, say is not likely. And Doug Hagman makes the same case, makes the same point. And then Manning is, or rather, Assange is accused of this sex crime by this woman, by these two women in Sweden, one of whom is linked to an organization with CIA ties. So you got an intelligence link there. And Manning, Bradley Manning, is outed to the United States government by Assange, or rather by Adrian Lamo, who's working for a group that's essentially doing spying on a contract basis for the National Security Agency and other U.S. government intelligence agencies. It's one big circle of intelligence agencies fighting with one another. At least that's how it looks.
You know, we've gotten our PhDs in intelligence work via John Drake.
Yes.
Danger Man.
Yes, Secret Agent Man if you're American. Danger Man if you're British.
He's shown us the way.
Yes.
Well, and he hardly ever used a gun.
Yeah. Patrick McGoohan, sorry, he outbonds Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah. Well, he turned down Bond.
Yeah, yeah. He could have been. A couple of interesting things. This is something that popped up last week, and I talked about this very briefly on Friday night on A View from the Bunker. New York City is launching a pilot program to increase the number of organ donations. This is creepy because the six-month test project allows doctors to approach families about donation within 20 minutes after a loved one dies of cardiac arrest at home. How do they do this? They monitor police band radios and sit there waiting for a call from a family member, presumably, or someone who's discovered someone who is about to expire.
They're ambulance chasers.
They are the ambulance. They're actually angel of death chasers.
They are.
What they do?
It's Dan Aykroyd.
From the Twilight Zone movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Want to see something really scary? Let me see if I can quote the article here to make sure I get this here. The team will monitor the 911 calls and dispatch a team when it appears someone is about to expire. They will get there. Separate from the EMTs with a specially equipped ambulance. And while they are there, they will attempt to persuade the family members of the soon-to-be deceased to sign over the organs.
Oh, my goodness!
And here's the thing. You don't sign up for the program. You don't call these people to say, hey, we've got someone here who may... They will come because they've been monitoring the 911 calls, and they will show up and say, we're just here for the organs. And if the family agrees, they load them into this specially equipped...
Do they hand them money at that time or something?
I don't know. It's a Fire Department of New York ambulance called the Organ Preservation Unit, specially equipped, because, you know, once the person dies, there's a limited amount of time to get those to remove the organs and preserve them for transport to a person in need of a kidney or a heart or a liver or whatever. But they've got to act quickly, because if the organs go without oxygen for even, you know, a matter of minutes, they begin to degrade and they're no longer useful. But I think this is really creepy that they're going to be monitoring 911 calls, listening for people who are about to die, and they're rushing to the scene while a family is panicking, presumably, and shoving release forms under their noses, saying, here, just sign this.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And remember, Soylent Green is people.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, this is connected in a very loose way to a video that I watched today, recommended by, I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, recommended by one of my many Facebook friends, and I don't want to say the wrong name, so I won't say it. Please forgive me. I do well to remember things. In fact, when I brought this up to Derek, he said, well, we watched that together. I watched this video today for what I am quite sure was the first time. And Derek said, oh, no, don't you remember? We watched that together. We even talked about it on our show. And so honestly, I don't remember
any of
that.
Well, we're not sure which one of us is was in the alternate universe.
Well, I do have memory problems sometimes, so please forgive me because I don't remember the person who recommended this video. But I watched it, and it is called Madness on the Motorway. And it's about identical twins who are discovered on CCTV on a British motorway running into traffic, heavy traffic on the M1 and or one of the major motorways. And this extremely strange behavior that they exhibited, and we don't have time to go into it now, but the reason I mentioned it is during the rantings and ravings of Sabina, who was one of the twins, she was going on and on and screaming epithets, not very nice ones, at the policeman trying to help her. She was saying, no, no, you want to take my organs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
This incident took place in May of 2008 in the UK, and it was the M6. A very, very bizarre incident, and the BBC, there just happened to be a BBC cameraman on the scene.
Yeah,
he was riding
with
police officers.
We're going to talk more about this show tomorrow, because I there are a lot of things about this that I want to discuss, and if we've discussed this before on a past episode, please forgive me.
No, I think you're right. I think I was mistaken. I did bring it up on A View from the Bunker one night, and for some reason that translated, but the alternate universe theory works for me too. So,
who are you? How could I mistake you? You're my handsome hubby.
You're my queen.
Aww. Mm.
So, this is Friday night.
Now that you've all vomited.
Yes. Doug Hagman of the Northeast Intelligence Network talking about Julian Assange and what he calls a staged crime scene. And he's also going to share what he's learned from some of his sources in the military and intelligence circles about that missile off the coast of California a couple of weeks back. He's of the opinion that it was not a contrail. And then, of course, Dr. Jim Garlow, and I'll be talking with him in less than 45 minutes real time about several events that we talked a lot about over the past year. The May Day 2010 event, he was one of the organizing group. The Manhattan Declaration, he and Chuck Colson have been really pushing people to sign the Manhattan Declaration, and Glenn Beck and his call to revival, and why evangelical pastors, Bible-believing Christian pastors, which I believe Dr. Garlow is, support a call to revival from a Mormon. So we'll talk about all that and give him an opportunity to share his reasons.
I think that's the fairest thing to do. Let him come on and just tell you why, rather than speak for him.
Right. So anyway, that's coming up Friday night. And meanwhile, we will be back tomorrow, God willing. And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out.